Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Vamad Aleph. After the Gemara ended off yesterday with the statement of Rava that Halacha is like Rav with these three Membrot that dealt with Yom Tov Rishon, Yom Tov Sheni with regards to Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Galiot, Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Tov adjacent to Shabbat, we're bringing another Membrot from Rava that deals with this topic, and that is Amar Rava, Meit by Yom Tov Rishon, if a person passes away on the first day of Yom Tov, Itasku bo Amamim, the non-Jews could take care of the burial. Meit b'Yom Tov Sheni, if he passes away on the second day of Yom Tov, Itasku bo Israel, then Jews can take care of the burial. Va'afilu b'Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah. This is not only true with regards to Shnei Yamim Tovim Shel Galiot, because there it's much easier to be Mekil, because of the belief that those 2 days are Misafek, and therefore even after we have the calendar that's set up, Gemara told us that's Minhag Abutehem B'Yadehem, but nevertheless we view Yom Tov Sheni as being an institution Derabbanan, and that has a much lower form of Kiddusha, and therefore we can abrogate the Isurim of Yom Tov Sheni in order to take care of a mate or covet a mate. On the other hand, when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, we've already discussed, and Rava told us that the Halacha is like Rav, that it's Kiddusha Achat, that it's one big Kiddusha. And that means that the first day and the second day of Rosh Hashanah, there is no distinction in terms of their status. So over here, Rava is saying, despite the fact that that is true, with regards to a mate, that distinction still holds like it does by Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot. And therefore, Yom Tov Sheni, we will be Mekil versus that which we would say in Yom Tov Rishon, even by Rosh Hashanah. Masha Ein Kein Bebeitza. But that's not true by an egg, because we just saw that Rava Paskin like Rav with regards to an egg. That means if the egg was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, you can't eat it on the second day because we don't view it as one day's Kodesh, one day's Chol, and therefore it's a Safek, and therefore Mimonov Shach, you can eat the egg on the second day. We view Rosh Hashanah as being Kedusha Achat, a single Kedusha, and therefore it has a Chumrah that if the egg is born on the first day, it remains a Suar, just like it is on the first day, into the second day. So what Rav is saying is that this Halacha is nuanced, which is that it's true with regards to muksa, it's true with regards to certain items, but in certain instances the Chachamim waive this idea of Kedusha Achat, and that is in the case of Kavanah Meit, where they allowed the Yisraelim to be metapo b'meit on a Yom Tov Sheni. Nardai Amre, the Nardai say, Af Bebeitza. The Nardai basically expressed an opinion that with regards to Rosh Hashanah, it's no different than the Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Galiot. That means that the first day is the real day of Yom Tov, and the second day is just Minog Abotem B'Yadayim because of the Safek, and therefore it has Dinim that where will be Mekil. Will we make it with regards to a mate? But we also will make it with regards to a Beitza. If the egg was laid on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, then just like by Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Galiot, when it comes to the second day of Yom Tov, we will allow you to utilize it, we will allow you to eat that egg. And so the Nardai are making a claim that this is not only true by Meit, but it's also true by the Beitza. And they say, the Madatech. Wait a minute, we just discussed this in yesterday's daf, that the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai existed, and then after the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was reversed, nevertheless, the din for the people in Bavel, who always had 2 days, didn't change. For Bnei Eretz Yisrael, it did change, because it changed the dynamic inside of Eretz Yisrael. Before, they used to keep 2 days because of the takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, because maybe they would come in a mincha and a malah, therefore they would keep 2 days. And then they changed back to sometimes they had 1 day, sometimes they had 2 days, and therefore the takana was eliminated for them because they've now not continued to practice like that, as opposed to the people in the Gola, who always kept 2 days. They kept 2 days before because of a safek. After takana to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they continued to keep 2 days, not just because of a safek, but because of takanat Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And then after the reversal or the removal of the takanat Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they still continued to keep 2 days. Since there was never any cessation in their keeping 2 days, those 2 days look or take on the pattern of what they were beforehand, which means that they remain as Kedusha Achat, like it was under the auspices of takanat of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So the Nardai explained the logic behind their position, which is, Af Bebeitza Demadatech. What do you think? Dilma Abre Le Elul. The whole fear here is the possibility that Elul will actually have 30 days in it instead of 29 days. And therefore you'll have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah because they'll be Ma'aber. They'll push out Rosh Chodesh to the 31st day, meaning that the first of Tishrei will be after 30 days of Elul rather than 29 days of Elul. And then the 30th day will be the first of Tishrei. That's the fear, because that's the only instance where you're going to have 2 days of consecutive Yom Tov, because you kept the first day in case it was Rosh Chodesh, and then when they deferred it to the second day, you kept the second day as well. So then you have 2 days of Yom Tov. Hamar Rav Chinina Bar Kahana, Amar Rav, we have a Mesorah from Rav, that Mimot Ezra Velech Lo Matzinu Elo Mubar. From the time of Ezra until now, we don't have any case where Elo was Mubar, where Elo was a 30-day month. Now, the truth is that when we're speaking about Rava, Rava is on the cusp of when there's a transition from the Mikadesh of Piyariyah to Mikadesh Ayudea Luach or Odea Cheshbon. The Rambam says that it began in the time of the Amoraim, and it's not clear where Rava and Abai sat on that threshold, and so many of the commentaries on the Rambam suggest that it was on both sides, that the transition took place during their lifetime, because of the fact that this Gemara seems to indicate that Rava, that in our diet, we're still experiencing the possibility of an Ibur month based on Al-Piyariyah. And so it sounds like they were still Mekadesh Al-Piyariyah, even though many believed by that time already it was Ayudei Cheshbon, and therefore some believe that the time of Rav and Abaye is the time when this transition is taking place. And so what they're saying is that before, when they were Mekadesh Al-Piyariyah, that the Chachamim always fixed the calendar or made the adjustments that they could prior to getting to Elul. In order to avoid the problem of having Elul be 30 days and to adjust the calendar at that moment, they looked ahead. And by looking ahead, they were able to adjust the calendar without having to make Elul into a 30-day month. Now, the Gemara points out that in the time of Ezra, there was a Elul Me'ubar. That's because the Pasuk in Nehemiah says that with regards to their celebrating Rosh Hashanah, that Yom HaSheni, it says on the second day. The Pashtut, a Pasuk over there, just means the day after Rosh Hashanah, that they began to make the preparations for Sukkot, after they learned in the Torah what all the instructions were with regards to Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot. And their preparations to build a Sukkah began on the next day. Rashi notes over here that Chazal interpret the Yom HaSheni to mean on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. And in that year, they made it into a Me'ubar. So they used that as the paradigm of the last time when we knew that something like this happened. That was way back in the time of Ezra. Now, even though the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai wasn't relevant back then, it's still the last time we knew that Chazal, or that the Chachamim, instituted an Elul that had 30 days to it. Now, don't we have the case of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai where the Kilkulu Bashir? So that's one case where it happened that they came late in the day after Mincha, and from that instance, or that incident, they instituted the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan and Zakkai that min a Mincha Amala, you can't accept a Dim. And what Rashi points out is that never happened again. That was the only time it happened. And when they realized that it never happened again, when they dismantled the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they did not classify it as being a Takana that continued in the Gola, as if it was an unbroken chain of 2 days of Yom Tov, because even in the Gola, since this Takana never really took hold because of the fact that it never happened, therefore it's not really, it has no bearing on the 2 days of Yom Tov that we keep. And so therefore the Nardai believe that Takanat Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, even though it was instituted, it never went into effect because it never was a practical issue. Since it never happened again, it was never a practical issue, it's not influential in the 2 days of Yom Tov that is kept by the people in the Gola. That means the 2 days of Yom Tov they're keeping is me Sveika Diyoma, and the Sveika Diyoma of Minhag Avotehem B'Yadehem, and that Sveika Diyoma is like any other Yom Tov Shel Galiot, where the first day is much more serious, is Doraita. And the second day, which we know is Chol, is only a Din Derabonon. And therefore, the distinction that you make for the mate will also be the similar distinction you have for the Beitzah, for the egg. And again, this is all because they believe that the Takanat of Yochanan ben Zakkai never was meaningful, because it never happened. And the Chachamim ensured that it always was on the 29th. And therefore, and since the Edim came before Mincha, and all of these years of Rosh Hashanah, the Takanat of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was never really implemented, or never went into effect. And since retroactively it became clear that the Takana of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was not relevant, and therefore the Kedusha Achat that we were imposing on individuals with regards to Rosh Hashanah also became unwound when we realized that it wasn't a real chashash, a real issue. And therefore everything is viewed then like a Shtei Kedushot and not a Kedusha Achat when it comes to the 2 days of Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. And so because of that, there is no residual impact on the Gola that keeps 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. And therefore, 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, according to the Nardai, look like any other 2 days of Yom Tov, where the first day is Doraita and the second day is Derabonan, and it's like a Sveika Diyoma, where we can be Mekil from one day to the other. Now, we have an additional qualification here, going back to Rova's statement with regards to the mate, which is Amar Mazutra Lo Amran El Ishtai. It's only true if the mate has already been left out for a certain amount of time, it is decomposing, there is reason to accelerate the burial, because of the kavod of mate. But that means aval lo yishtai mishayinanle. If the mate has not laid around for a while, and therefore it could last until after Yom Tov, mishayinanle, then we let it go and we wait to bury the mate until after Yom Tov is over. Now the Rashba points out, and the Shulchan Rashba points out, that it doesn't have to be that the mate already had waited. It could be even the fact that the mate will have to wait. So for instance, if Shabbat is going to be after Yom Tov, then you know for sure you can't bury on Shabbat. So that's going to cause the mate to have to sit around for a long time. So it doesn't have to be something that has actually happened already, but it can be even in anticipation of that which will happen in the future, which will cause a shihiyah, and then you won't be able to bury the mate, and that will be a lack of kavod in the mate. Body will decompose. And therefore, we would allow you to accelerate or do this on Yom Tov. Rashi here, commenting on this statement of Zmar Zutra, says, Lo Amran di te'asko bo Yisrael. He says this is only a qualification of the second din of Rava. The first din of Rava is that when it comes to the first day of Yom Tov, you can have non-Jews do the burial. On the second day of Yom Tov, you can have Jews do the burial. Now, what he's saying is that Mar Zutra is only commenting on that second day. When we have Jews do it, that's only true when the mate is already beginning to decompose, or there's a reason to accelerate the burial. There we allow the Jews to do the burial on the second day of Yom Tov. Whereas, when it comes to the first day of Yom Tov, what is implied from Rashi is that Mar Zutra does not have that requirement of being Mishai to leave it over. Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbat, in the parallel Gemara, says there that it applies to both Dinim. And this will have a huge nafkamina l'alocha as to whether you need, in order for the non-Jews to bury the mate on the first day of Yom Tov, do you need this Mishayin? Is it necessary that the mate already has gone through some sort of delay or is beginning to decompose in order for us to engage the non-Jews in doing this melacha? So that's the statement of Mar Zutra, who's qualifying that din of Rava. But then we have Rav Ashi, who retorts and says, Rav Ashi Amar, Avagav Doi Shtai Nami Lo Mishayin Le. It doesn't matter. Even if there was no delay, even if there's no decomposition of the body, we still allow you to bury the mate on the second day of Yom Tov, my taima. What's the reason? Yom Tov Sheni, the Gabe mate, kechol shavua rabbonon. Because then on Yom Tov Sheni, the rabbonon, which the whole din of Yom Tov Sheni is a din de rabbonon anyway, you could formulate this in one of two ways. Either rabbonon never instituted the Isser Malach or any Isserim with regards to Yom Tov when it came to a mate on Yom Tov Sheni. Or you could say that after they instituted the Yom Tov Sheni, they did not uphold the Dinei Drabonon in the face of a mate or in the face of Kavod a mate. And again, that will have maybe nafkaminot as to how hutra or how permissive we're going to be with regards to this second day of Yom Tov. So the statement of Rav Ashi is clearly only referencing to the second day of Yom Tov. That maybe is what compelled Rashi to say that Mar Zutra was also only talking about the second day of Yom Tov. And therefore their argument is about the second day of Yom Tov. Whereas by the first day of Yom Tov, you wouldn't have to have this problem of decomposition at all. According to Rashi in the Gemara in Shabbat, where both days, the first and second day, require decomposition or for us to engage either the non-Jews the first day or Jews the second day, then Rav Ashi is clearly only arguing on the second day. And he would agree with regards to Mar Zutra staying with the first day, and that would mean that you need decomposition on the first day in order to wait. And that turns out to be a machloket in the Rishonim as to whether you need Shiyah on the first day in order for you to engage non-Jews to bury the mate on the first day, or is this only a requirement when it comes to Jews on the second day? Now, how far does this go that we made it to Chol? Gemara says, "Afilu l'migaz le'glima," even to make for him a cloak, "l'migaz le'asa," or to cut for him myrtle. Now, none of these items are direct necessities of the mate, meaning that Rashi points out here, this mate already has tachrichim, it already has shrouds to be buried in. It doesn't need the glima. The glima is just an additional item out of kavod a mate. The same thing with the myrtle that's placed on the mate. That is so that it offset the putrid smell if the body was decomposing. They used to have the minhag to put the myrtle there so that it would take away or override the foul odor that might come from the mate as part of the kavod a mate. So these things are ancillary to the mate. Nevertheless, we still allow you to do it on Yom Tov Sheni. And that's the proof that Rav Ashi is pointing out, that even these types of items, which are not directly kavod hamet, nevertheless we do permit them on Yom Tov Sheni, because Yom Tov Sheni is hutra legabei hamet. And we paskin halacha like Rav Ashi. Amar Ravina, so Ravina has another qualification to this din of the mate. Vayidna adika chavre, nowadays where they have the chavre, which were a more radicalized Zoroastrian priest class, and when the Sassanid dynasty came to power, they elevated the status of the religious Zoroastrianism in the Persian Empire. and they persecuted the Jews. We see this come up with Ner Chanukah in the Gemara and Shabbat. We've seen a number of instances on and off with regards to the Amoraim as to whether they were persecuted. And this has to do with, again, the status of these priests within the governing dynasty and how much clout they were given. So there were certain instances where they were given more clout, and that's what we're being discussed here, which is Chashinan. We do worry about it because, as Rashi explains over here, these priests used to force the Jews to work for the government and to pay taxes in that manner. And so they could press them into service. And the Jews, on the second day of Yom Tov, used to say that we can't work today, it's our holiday. And that gave them an exemption. But if the priests would see them bearing the mate on the second day of Yom Tov, then it would look like not Yom Tov. It would look like the fact that they are working on that day. And then that would give them more power or ammunition to persecute the Jews and to force them to work on Yom Tov Sheni. So therefore, we would be choshesh. We'd worry about bearing on the second day. We might actually not do it, even though it's permissible, because of the ramifications of bearing on the second day, which would allow these priests then to force the Jews to labor on the second day of Yom Tov, and the second day of Yom Tov would go by the wayside. And therefore, we would opt not to bury, even though technically it might be allowed halachically, but because of the ramifications, we wouldn't allow it. The other possibility, which Rashi doesn't discuss, which is that part of this religious cult was that they did not allow for burial. And therefore, the burial was something that was a problem in terms of either non-Jews engaging in the burial, or when the Jews engaged in burial on their Yom Tov, it might have been something that would have aroused ire of the authorities, and therefore they were trying to bury in a more private way and not to do it in a manner that was obvious when it's a day of Yom Tov, where it would be clear that they were burying the mate because nobody's doing anything besides that, and therefore they tried to avoid doing it on Yom Tov. So Ravina has a slight pullback on the head there, but it's uniquely associated with a time of persecution when there would be a problem or there would be ramifications from burying on the second day. So now I'm going to take a moment just to look at Tosafot. And after we look at Tosafot, we're going to go to the Shulchan Aruch and look at the Halacha and discuss the different views within the Rishonim through the Halacha so that we can understand how this Gemara plays out in Halacha the Maaseh. Tosafot does point out over here that today where there are no Chaverim, then the Heter should go back to its original state and we should be permitted to bury on the second day of Yom Tov. Despite that fact, the Rabbeinu Tam is a little reticent to be Matir, because he says many people are not B'nai Torah, and for Matir them to bury on the second day of Yom Tov, they'll come to be Mizalzel in the second day of Yom Tov. The Ri argues against that position of the Rabbeinu Tam, because he believes that there are many instances where we don't have B'nai Torah, and we still allow things to happen, despite the fact that they might be misconstrued by those people, and then cause other abrogations of the Halacha. But the Rabbeinu Chiyo defends the Rabbeinu Tam's position and says burying a mate is very different than other items. Burying a mate is a very public display. And if you're doing a public display of Chilul Yom Tov, then people are going to come to believe that the second day of Yom Tov is not really a Yom Tov. And then in the end, they'll just do away with the second day of Yom Tov. Therefore, he's very reticent to be matiret. What's interesting about what the Tosafot says here is that the fact that the Chaverim came in and caused the problem was only a temporary suspension of the Heter. Once the Chaverim left, then the assumption is they would go back to its former state if it were not for the other mitigating factors, like the people where they were burying were not B'nai Torah and would misconstrue that which was being done. That's interesting only because the Chaverim are the same problem that the Gemara mentions in Bamei Badikim with regards to the Hanukkah candles as to why people light inside their house and not outside because of the dangers associated with that. That would imply that once those dangers pass, that the obligation would then be reinstated to have to light outside. And Tosafot over there does not make that comment. And the Rama himself in Shulchan Aruch notes that once the minhag became to light inside, that became the din of perhesia, and they don't have to light outside anymore. But according to this Tosafot, it would seem that once the danger passed, it should return to its former state, and that is the general practice in Eretz Yisrael today, which is to light outside. Tosafot points out that the Gemara in Moed Katan says that when it comes to Chol HaMoed, one is not permitted to dig kuchin. Now they dig catacombs to bury people in. Now over here, it sounds like the Gemara says that Yom Tov Sheni is totally hutra with regards to a mate. So how could it be that on Chol HaMoed it's problematic, and on Yom Tov Sheni it's totally fine? So Tosafot says, he brings the Perush Arach from the Gemara Moed Katan, and he says that the Gemara Moed Katan, talking about when they dig catacombs, they dig those for large numbers of people. They don't dig it just for the person that's there for the mate. When they dig it out to make a large number of kuchin that make it possible to bury individuals there. That type of malacha is problematic on Chol HaMoed because it's preparing for Chol. It's preparing for after Yom Tov, and that's not permitted. Over here, where the digging or the burying is done particularly for this mate on Yom Tov, that would be permissible. That's how Tosafot deals with this stira. There are other Rishonim that deal with it in other ways, including the possibility that Chol HaMoed is more chamur than Yom Tov Sheni. And that is because Chol HaMoed is midoraita, is min haTorah. Yom Tov Sheni is only midrabanan. Now, that would only be true if you're dealing with the last day of Yom Tov. If you're dealing with either second day of Shavuot, the eighth day of Pesach, or the ninth day of Sukkot, then that would be true that the second day of Yom Tov is only midrabanan, period. Chol HaMoed's deoraita. And therefore, maybe it's possible that the dinim of Chol HaMoed are more chamur than the dinim of the Rabbonon of Yom Tov Sheni. With regards to Yom Tov Sheni, the second day of Yom Tov, when it comes to the first days of Pesach and the first day of Sukkot, over there, even if it's not Yom Tov Sheni, it's still Chol HaMoed. And so therefore you can't make that distinction. You only can make that distinction with regards to the latter days. That's why many do not think that that is the proper distinction to make. Others suggest, and we'll see this in the halacha, that the heter of melacha on Yom Tov Sheni is governed by Chol HaMoed. Meaning that whatever would be permissible on Chol HaMoed is what is permitted on Yom Tov Sheni. When they say kechol, doesn't mean literally like a weekday, it means kechol HaMoed. And whatever is permitted on Chol HaMoed would be permitted on Yom Tov Sheni, and therefore would be governed by that rule. And then you would have the answer like the Tosafot that the Rabbeinu Chanan says, you can't on Chol HaMoed do more work than is necessary for that which is Davar Aved, that is necessary right now. And so that would be true in our instance as well, that you can't do more than the mate needs, but you can do what the mate needs over here. Now going to the Shulchan Aruch in Taf Kuf Chafvav Sif Aleph, over there it says, Mate Hamutale Kovro. They have a mate that's lying around to be buried. Imhu b'Yom Tov Rishon, if it's on the first day of Yom Tov, Lo Yitrasku Bo Yisrael, a Jew should not be involved with it, Vafilu Yasriach, even if the mate will decompose. That's the gloss of the Ramah. Ela Yitrasku Bo Amemim. The Shulchan Aruch continues, you have non-Jews, deal with it. Afilu mate bo bayom. Even if he dies on that day. So it's clear here that the Mechaber is paskening like the view that the Shihiyah is only a qualification for the Jewish burial, but not for the burial by non-Jews. And therefore, even if the person passed away on that day, we allow them to engage the non-Jews to bury the mate. Vafilu im yocholim l'shaoto ad machar shelo yasriach. Even if they have the possibility of leaving the mate over until the second day of Yom Tov, where it will not decompose, we still do not allow it to stay over. Now here, there's a major machloket in the Rishonim and Achronim as to why that is the case. Meaning that we have the mate on the first day, it's not going to decompose. So now you have the option to allow the non-Jews to bury the mate on the first day, or we can wait till the second day and have Jews bury him. And Jews burying him, it would be a bigger kavod to the mate. Therefore, maybe we should leave over the mate from the first day to the second day, and allow him to be buried by Jews, which would be a much greater kavod mate. And in Halacha Bet, the Rosh Hashanah says something similar, which is mate b'yom tov rishon asur lahalino ad yom tov sheni. One is not permitted to leave it over to yom tov sheni. K'day shitasku bo Yisrael, in order that the Yisraelim should do it. So why do we not do that? Now, there are three different views with regards to this. Two of them explain why it is asur. One in basic principle is because it's asur laluna to mate. You're not allowed to leave a mate overnight. It's a disgrace. It's a bizayona mate. And therefore, we'd rather that he gets buried by non-Jews on the first day of Yom Tov than leave the mate overnight till the next night. The problem maybe with that position is that many ask on that position, if it really is more kavod a mate to have Jews bury the mate, then maybe that's an offsetting factor to the linat mate of leaving the mate overnight and the bizayona mate. Maybe that's compensated for by the fact that on the next day, the family could accompany the mate, and the fact that Jews would bury the mate. So there are other Rishonim like the Meire, the Shita Mekubetzet, and others that believe that the problem here is not about linat mate. Rather, the problem is that you have a choice between Amir La'akum, which is a passive violation d'rabbanan of Yom Tov on the first day, versus Isuk B'yadayim, when you're actively going to violate Yom Tov Sheni if Jews get involved on the next day. And therefore, if I have a choice between passive violation of the first day, an adin derabbanan of Amir La'akum, which was a b'makom tzorech, I'd opt for that over waiting to the second day where you're going to have to actively engage with the mate and violate Yom Tov Sheni. Even though, as Rav Ashi had said earlier, with regards to Yom Tov Sheni, Shavu Rabbanan Kichol, they made it like a weekday. The question about that, when they made it like a weekday, is that really Hutra or Duchuya? And if it is hutra, then maybe it wouldn't make a difference. Whereas if it is dechuya, then we would try to opt, or we do our best efforts not to violate something actively biyadayim versus doing it in a passive manner, and therefore that reason it's asur. And that way, even if it was kavod hamet to wait till the next day, we still would not allow you to do that, and that it maybe is a better answer. What's interesting about that is that even according to those that give that reason, like the Shita Mekubetzet and others, they suggest that you can leave the mate over. That's based on the Ravid. The Ravid says that the chatchila, you should leave the mate over. If it's possible to leave them over without having any decomposition, you should leave them over for the first day to the second day because it's kavod hamet to have the Jews bury him, and the chatchila you should do such. The Mishnah Berurah here brings from many achronim that say that if you do leave the mate over from the first day to the second day, that there's a knas, there's a penalty that he cannot be buried by Jews, he has to be buried by non-Jews. Obviously what the achronim were trying to do was dissuade people from doing it, to say that there's no benefit by leaving it over because they're going to bury him by non-Jews the next day anyway because of this knas. The Mishnah Berurah is very wary of this knas. He thinks that it's misplaced. He said, first of all, you're being kones the mate, and the mate didn't do anything wrong. Since the mate didn't do anything wrong, why aren't you allowing him to be buried by Jews, which would be a bigger kavod hamet? So that's the first thing. He thinks the knas is misplaced. Second of all, he said, just like we just noted now, there are many Rishonim, including the Ravid, who believe l'chatchila you should wait until the next day. Plus, on top of that, there are other Rishonim who believe that you can't bury on the first day if you haven't had shiyah yet, if it hasn't been already decomposed or waited around already, whatever, you'd have to leave to the second day. Plus, even according to those that say that the problem is not linatamate, but the problem is because of active violation of the second day of Yom Tov, some of those Rishonim believe that you still should be kavod hamet, leave it over. So he says, okay, well, it's hard to go against the Stam Shulchan Aruch over here and say to leave it over intentionally, but at least b'diavad, if it was left over already, then it should be permissible for Jews to bury. Now, in terms of what they can do or what malacha can be done, this with regards to the first day is Hozeb Asiat Kever Varon V'Tachrichim. The non-Jews should be engaged in all malachot deoraita. V'lahal Bisho Ulechamem Lo Mayim L'Taharo Olotzio Ulesomo B'Kever Mutara De Yisrael. All things that are only a violation derabbanon on the first day of Yom Tov that Jews can do and take care of. So, since the non-Jews are only needed for the deoraita, we allow the Jews to deal with the Dinei Derabbanan. There are Rishonim who believe that once we're already using the non-Jews to do the burial, and that aspect of kavod hamet is already gone by the wayside because the non-Jews are going to be involved, therefore, when it comes to anything involved with the mate, we prefer that a non-Jew does it over a Jew, since there's no reason to allow a Jew to violate even a Derabbanan for the purpose of kavod hamet, since the kavod hamet is going to go by the wayside anyway because the non-Jews are going to have to do the burial anyway. Now, as the Shulchan Aruch continues in Sif Gimel, he says, by Shabbat and Yom Kippurim, there's no din of burial. That doesn't matter whether it's a non-Jew or a Jew. Those days, the Chachamim upheld the Dinei Derabbanan and the Dinei Doraita because they are much more chamur in terms of their Kedusha. And therefore, Yom Kippurim and Shabbat have no waiver for the burying of the mate. Now, B'Yom Tov Sheni Itasku Bo Yisrael, Afilu B'Yom Sheni Shal Rosh Hashanah. So like our Gemara says, like Rava says over here, it's the second day of Yom Tov, including Rosh Hashanah, then we allow Jews to be mitasek. Avlo Elo Lo Yishtai. Even if it was not left over, meaning like Rav Ashi in our Gemara, who says you don't have to wait or have it being decomposed in order for you to violate it because it's considered like chol. Afil lachtoch lo hadas me'amechubar, even to take myrtle from something that's attached, din doraita, but it's only Yom Tov Sheni, which is the Rabbanon. Basot lo tachrichim v'aron, v'chaktsov lo kever, even to dig out a grave for him. Chamin lo maim letaro, l'glozo tzoro, to cut the hair. V'mein bo ta'ir, makom kivrot l'yisrom, l'chim ato l'yir acheret. Yesh v'ashkunat kivrot. If there's no burial ground here, they take him to the Jewish cemetery that's in the next city. V'ilu chutz l'tchum, even if it's outside the chum. Maskivim lo sfina lo l'chog mikam makom l'kom. And you could hire a boat to take him to wherever it needs to go, meaning assuming that there's a place close by. We don't violate wantonly Yom Tov, but if that's what's necessary, that's what we do. Because, do Yom Tov sheni the gabi meit, kachol shav yu rabbanan. Comes to Yom Tov Sheni, where they're made, the Rabbanan made it like it as if it was Chol. Afilu efshar ba'amamim, itasku bo Yisrael. And even if it's possible to do it by non-Jews, we still have Jews do it because that's the Takanat Chachamim. Interesting enough, the Ramah pulls back on that and says, v'ba'ashkenaz m'nitonot elu eino agim kein. That's not the minog. Eloko heikod efshar ba'amamim osim akever aron v'atachrifim ha'idei amamim. Anything that's in Dindo Raito, then we do it with non-Jews, even on the second day of Yom Tov. Shar dvarim osim Yisraelim kamo Yom Tov Rishon. But the rest of the items, then a Jew can do it, because it's no different than Yom Tov Rishon, where Dinei Derabbanan, here especially, where only a Yom Tov Sheni is a Derabbanan, you can do whatever you need. V'imlo efshar b'mamim, if it's impossible to do it with non-Jews, mutar lasot o yedei Yisrael, because that's the Ikar Adin. Nevertheless, the Ramah says that he prefers that you use non-Jews rather than Jews. That could be because of the Balei HaTosafot, who suggested that it would lead to problematic outcomes when people who are not meticulous in their Shemirat HaMitzvot see the violation of Yom Tov Sheni, they'll come to be mezalzel in Yom Tov Sheni. Although the Mishnah Berurah makes a note here that that's only true where the non-Jew is as efficient or can do it in the same timely fashion as a Jew could do it. If that's not the case, then even the Ramah will agree that you use Jews to do it in order not to have any bizayon made. Mishnah Berurah points out that all these violations of what would be the right melachot are qualified by the din of Chol HaMoed. It has to be what's mutar on Chol HaMoed in order for you to be able to do this on Yom Tov Sheni, in many instances because Yom Tov Sheni is Chol HaMoed, or even if it's the last day of Yom Tov, then we would still require you to at least meet the standards of your Chol HaMoed in terms of what melachot would be permitted. And the Mishnah Berurah also says, Yesh Kadvul Makom Kol Ma She'ef Shalamayit B'chilu M'matin. Again, this idea that maybe it's dechuya, and therefore we would try to minimize the amount of chilul that's done here in order to do the covenant made properly, but minimize the violations of Yom Tov Sheni in order to carry this out. I do know that it is the practice of the Breuer's community in Washington Heights, if there's a mate that needs to be buried on Yom Tov Sheni, that the Chevra Kadisha does do the burial, does go in a car, I'm assuming driven by a non-Jew, that takes them out to the cemetery, they bury the mate, and then come back afterwards, like the Ikar Din HaGemara, which is interesting only because the Ramah is not necessarily in favor of that, but maybe that's because they are a community of Shomrei Torah where it's not an issue, or because they feel like it would not be appropriate or as efficient or done as properly by non-Jews, and therefore the Jews do it in that case. So that is the one community that still has that practice. The remainder of the Jewish community lies on the fact that today we have refrigeration, and therefore in most instances the body will not decompose over that period of time, and the body can be buried after Yom Tov without any detriment or bizayon lamet. And now we're continuing with the Gemara. It says, Ravina Abba Yotiv Kamei, the Rav Ashi is probably the girsa that Rashi has. Ravina was sitting by Rav Ashi, Bishnei Yomim Tovim Shal Rosh Hashanah. On a Rosh Hashanah was 2 days of Yom Tov, like we have. Chazi Dav Otziv, he saw Ravina that Rav Ashi was upset. Amalei, Amai Otziv Mar, why are you so upset? Amalei, Dlo Otive Eruvei Tavshilin. Rav Ashi says, I didn't put an eye up on Erev Tavshilin. It was a case where Rosh Hashanah was Thursday, Friday, and then Shabbat was afterwards. And in order to cook for Shabbat on Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah, he would have to put an Erev Tavshilin put in place on Wednesday on Erev Yom Tov. So Amalei, so Ravina says back to him, Lo Tiv Mar Hayitna. Why can't you put an Erev Tavshilin today? Milo Amar Rava, doesn't Rava say, Meniach Adam Eruvei Tavshilin Mi Yom Tov L'Chaviro? Umatne, a person can put an Erev Tavshilin in place on a 2-day Yom Tov. So for instance, where you have 2 days of Yom Tov, Thursday, Friday, Shabbat, and you need to put Erev Tov Shlishi on Wednesday, if you forget to do that, you can come on Thursday and say, if today is Yom Tov, then I don't need an Erev Tov Shlishi because Friday is really Chol, and I could cook for Shabbat on Friday, which is Erev Shabbat. If on the other hand, today is Chol, the first day, and tomorrow, Friday, is going to be Yom Tov, whatever I'm putting aside now is going to be my Erev Tov Shlishi for cooking tomorrow on Friday in preparation of Shabbat. And you're allowed to do that because, as we saw earlier, when it comes to the Shtei Yom Tov and Shel Galiot, it's like Shtei Kedushot. Never you can make conditions or Tanaim between them, assuming that one is Chol and one is Kodesh, like we saw with regards to the Beit Zalat. The first day, that can be eaten on the second day. So he says, if that's true by Yom Tov Sheni Shel Galiot, why isn't it true by Rosh Hashanah as well? Amalei, he says, Ima Dama Rova B'Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Galiot. Wait a minute, Rova's statement was only made with regards to 2 Yomim Tovim of Galiot. B'Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah Mi'amar. Since when did he say it with regards to the 2 days of Yom Tov with regards to Rosh Hashanah? So now, Ravina says back, Vamarei Nardai. What about the Nardai at the beginning of our Gemara? You're right. Rava himself distinguishes between the burying of the mate and the Beitza, and he says with regards to a Beitza, Rosh Hashanah is Kedusha Achat. The Nardai disagreed with Rava, and the Nardai believed that it is Shtei Kedushot, and it doesn't have a din of Kedusha Achat, and a Beitza that's born on the first day of Rosh Hashanah is Mutar on the second day. So according to Nardai, you could do the same thing with Erev Tavshilin if it's Shtei Kedushot. You can do the same thing in Rosh Hashanah that you would do on Yom Tov Shel Galiot. So Abbeitza Muteret according to them. So Amalei Rav Mordechai. So Rav Mordechai jumps in and answers on behalf of his Rebbe, Rav Ashi. Rav Mordechai is a Talmud Muvhak of Rav Ashi. And he says, Beferish Amalei Mar. He says, explicitly, my Rebbe, Rav Ashi said to me, Dolo Savala Lahad De Naradai. He doesn't hold of the Din of Naradai. If he doesn't hold of the Naradai, then this is in a question on him. So question is not a fair question to him, and that's why he's upset, because he can't put together an Erev Tavshilin. And that's why Ravina's solution wasn't a good solution, because he believed that Rosh Hashanah was Kedusha Achat, versus the Naradai, who believed that it was Shtei Kedushot. The Shita Mikubetzet over here questions the Rambam's din in Ilchot Yom Tov, in Perek Vav, Aloch Yudalid, where he says, today, since we're Mekadesh Lefi HaCheshbon, and not Al Pi HaRiyah, then we don't make Shnei Yomim Safek El Mishum Minog. The reason that we keep Shnei Yomim Tovim, as we saw earlier in the Gemara, is Minog Avoteyem B'yodeyem. Fikach En Adam Me'arev U'matnei Al Erivo. Therefore, you can't make a condition in your Eruv, because it's really not a Safek of 2 days. We're keeping 2 days because of Minog Avoteyem B'yodeyem. And the Shittim Megvetzet says, our Gemara seems to prove otherwise. Rav Ashi, who's at the Sof of the Hora'ah, clearly after the time that they were Mekadesh Opiria, when they're already Mekadesh Opiria Cheshbon, and nevertheless, there's a suggestion here by Ravina that Rova's din of being matneh, making a condition to make an Eruv Tevshilin, would work. So therefore, there are those that change the girso over here to be Rav Asi instead of Rav Ashi, so that it would work out that it was before or prior to the changing over into the calendar versus Alpiria, in order to avoid that problem. The truth is that might be the Ikra Machlokah there between Ravina and Rav Ashi as to whether Rova's din applies to Rosh Hashanah or still applies today. The fact that Ravina says it applies even after your Mekadesh Opiya Cheshbon shows you that he believes that the reason that the Beitza is Asur from day one to day two is because Yom Tov Rishon is Adin Doraita and Yom Tov Sheni is just a Minog. And therefore the Beitza that's Asura from day one to day two is because it's a chana from Yom Rishon to Yom Sheni, which we wouldn't allow. But with the Erev Tavshilin, they would be Mako because of the Din D'Rabbanan, and assume that each day is only one of the 2 days is really Yom Tov, and therefore they could do the Erev Tavshilin al Etznai. Rav Ashi comes along and says that's not the case. The reason that Beitza is Asura on Rosh Hashanah, or maybe on Shnei Yomim on Rosh Hashanah, is because it's Kedusha Richta, it's Kedusha Achat. It's one big Kedusha, and that's what makes it Asura. Now, if it's one big Kedusha, then we can't be Mekil with regards to the Tanai on Erev Tavshilin because we don't assume that either day is Chol or either day is less than the other day. And therefore, when it comes to Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Galiot, that they did Al Pi HaSafek, therefore you could make the Tanai, according to Rava, with the Beitza, or with the Erev Tavshilin, or with regards to the Beitza, would be Mutaret. Rosh Hashanah, that's Kedusha Richter, a single Kedusha, would not have that Heter. And today, where the only reason we keep Shnei Yomim Tovim, even in Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Galiot, is Minhag, then the Rambam's din would be true that you can't do this tonight, because like suggests over there that the Minhag, the Mega that it's Asur, it's like the Shnei Yomim Tovim Shel Rosh Hashanah, where it's all Kedusha Achat, or we don't permit you to look at one of the days, like Chol, that would be the view of the Rambam, but that's not necessarily the way that we paskin La Halacha, because we treat the Minhag as if it is a simulation of what happened in the time of the Safek, and therefore we treat the 2 days as a Safek, even though it's just a minhag that we're keeping the days, we preserve the structure or the format by which it was done in the past, and therefore you can have a Beitza late on one day, be Muteret on the second day, and possibly do a Tanai in your Erev Tavshilin. Okay, Yitmar, now we move on to another halachic issue, which is Efrach Shenolar B'Yom Tov. You have a chick that is hatched on Yom Tov. Rav Amar Asur, Rav says it's problematic. You can understand why. Most likely because it looks like Nolad, something that is now born on Yom Tov itself. It wasn't Mukhan before. Now all of a sudden it becomes readily available to you on Yom Tov. That's something that was already Muksa and should not be permitted on Yom Tov. Shmuel, V'item Rabbi Yochanan, arguing on Rav Yavida Shmuel or Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Mutar, that it's fine. Rav Amar Asur Muksu, it's a problem of Muksa, very possibly Nolad, although we'll see later on that maybe it's not Nolad, maybe it's a problem of Muksa Machmat Isur, or Machmat something else. Ushmuel V'item Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mutar Hoil U'matir Atzmo B'Shchita. Since the Shchita is now a permissible way to deal with this chick, so too it eliminates the problem of Muksa. The way to, the simplest way to explain this, again, this is a major machlok in the Rishonim, how to explain this whole Gemara, but we'll just take the simplest approach to explaining it, which is that until now you had a chick that was inside of an egg. That chick inside the egg is an entity that is muksa because it was not usable, or it was not something that you could engage with on Yom Tov because there's nothing you can do with it that has purpose on Yom Tov. Once the chick hatches, the chick is now a new entity. Before you had a chick and an egg, now you have a chick. And that chick is something that can be shechted and has a new status. It's like a bird instead of something being an egg that was not edible beforehand. That change in status makes it that it's no longer bound or encumbered by the muksa that was there before. Now, why isn't it considered to be nolad? That is because the entity was there all along. Meaning that nolad is something that wasn't there beforehand and now it's been created and now it comes into existence. That's not true here. The chick was always there. It was just inaccessible to us until this point in time. Now it's accessible to us. So maybe that's not considered to be nolad, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan or Shmuel believes over here that it's not a problem. Tosfos does question why they need that reasoning, because we saw earlier in the Masechta that Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel believed that there's no din of muksa on Yom Tov. So if there's no din of muksa on Yom Tov, why don't they just say that that's the reason that it's mutar, because we don't hold of muksa? Tosfos says either because one possibility is they're saying our position is even tenable if you hold there is muksa like Rabbi Yehuda. Inami, another possibility is that even according to Rabbi Shimon, the late muksa, moded behind the muksa, the hachavi could grow it to vitzimukim. That this type of muksa is like grow to vitzimukim, which is something that you push out of your mind and that you totally block out, because it's something that you would not assume is going to be usable on Shabbat. Just like when you put fruits out to dry on the roof, you don't expect to engage with them or utilize them, and therefore they're muksa, even according to Rabbi Shimon. So to over here, maybe that's the same thing you would have thought about an egg, that it is not something that you push out of your mind because it's not something you can access or utilize on Yom Tov. Therefore, maybe it has the din of muksa of Gugrot Vitzimukim. And then the response to that is that it's different since there's a possibility that it would hatch and then become Mutar B'Shechita. The Mutar B'Shechita overrides the problem of muksa, or the possible problem of muksa that would exist over here. So I'm like Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, the Rav. So two Talmidei Chaverim of Rav, Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, challenge Rav and say, V'chima ben zeh le'egel shenolad b'yom tov. Why is this any different than a calf that is born on Yom Tov? Now the truth is, it's a very simple distinction. That's what Rav answers. I'm like, oh, ho muchan agavimo b'shchita. That's because the calf inside the mother, if you shechted the mother, the calf would be mutar. So now when the calf is born and you shecht it, it's also mutar. It was never muksa, because it was ra'ui agavi mo. And then after it's born, it's ra'ui agav atzmo. And therefore there's no muksa. That's not true with regards to the egg. The egg until this point in time was inaccessible. It was not something that you could utilize. Now that the chick's born, now you can shecht it and you can make it mutar. That's a new situation. Something that was muksa until now. And now you're all of a sudden saying that it's mutar. That's different than the case of the egel. They asked him, okay, ma ben zeh le'egel shenolad min ha'treifa. Wait a minute. Who says that the egel is born to a mother who is a kosher animal? I mean, it's a possibility that the mother is a treifa and that the baby is born to a treifa. So yes, the shechita of the mother at this point would not be matir the baby, because the shechita of the mother would not be a kosher shechita because she's a treifa. Never that shechita would not be matir the baby. Nevertheless, the baby's born, and it has its own four simanim, meaning it has a mafis parsa and male gera, plus it has two simanim, a veshet and a kaneh of its own. You could sheft it, and it could be a kosher animal. So there you could do the shechita. The egel is mutar to eat on Yom Tov, despite the fact that its mother is not mutar, and when it's inside of its mother, it was not mutar either. If you shechted the mother, it would not have been matir, the egel that's inside. So that's much more akin to the case of the egg hatching into a chick. And yet, over there you say the egel is fine, and over here, you're saying that the chick that is hatched is not fine. What's the distinction? Shut the grav. Rav was silent. He didn't have an answer to that. That's a big problem for his position. So I'm a rabbo of Item Rav Yosef. So Rabbo or Rav Yosef came to the defense of Rav and said, my time is shut the grav. Why was Rav silent in this case? Lemelahu, ho muchana gavimo leklavim. Because it's a possibility that the mother was ra'oi leklavim. And since the mother was ra'oi leklavim, that took away the issue of muksa. And then once you take away the issue of muksa, because it's muchan leklavim, and when the baby's born, you're just upgrading it to be Muchan le'Adam. So Abaye was both the Talmud of Rabbah and Rav Yosef, answers back, Hashta Muchan le'Adam lo v'Muchan le'Klavim. Here we don't believe that if something is ra'oi for Adam and to use on Shabbat, you're not allowed to then defer it or change its status to be used for a Klavim. You can't downgrade it. So then certainly, we wouldn't let you upgrade. What Abaye is pointing out is that something to be Muchan le'Adam is a much higher standard. And if you meet that higher standard, we don't allow you to use something that has that higher standard where it's Mutar le'Adam to be used for Klavim. So then certainly in the inverse, which is something that's only Ra'oi le'Klavim, it doesn't meet the standard that it's good for a human being, so if that's Muksa for a human being, but okay for a Klavim, for dogs, there's no way just because it's good for dogs, it should be good for a human being. And if you can't go from a higher standard and allow you to use the lower standard, then certainly if you have the lower standard, you can't raise it to the higher standard. And he says, I can prove to you that Muchan le'Adam is not a Muchan le'Klavim, that's not. Because you have the Mishnah that which we quoted earlier in the Masechta from the Gemara in Shabbat. You're allowed to cut up the gourds to make it soft for the behemah to eat. And you're allowed to cut up a nevela for the dogs to eat and make it accessible to them. if it wasn't already an avela before Shabbat, it's a surah lefisha ena mina muchan. So it's not muchan. And as Rashi points out over here, Abaye is saying this all according to one, the man de itle muksa, according to one who holds a muksa, which is Rabbi Yehuda. And Rabbi Yehuda in the Mishnah in Shabbat, we just saw, says that something that was muchan adam, ben ashmashot, on the previous day, is now not all of a sudden muchan the klavim, if it dies on Yom Tov, and then you can give it to the klavim, because it wasn't ra'oi ben ashmashot for the klavim. So you see something that was muchan adam, does not automatically become muchan the klavim, according to one who holds of muksa, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Tosafot says, I don't understand what Rashi just said. That Mishnah is not talking about Yom Tov, that Mishnah is talking about Shabbat. And so how can you claim that it's muchan adam ben ashmashot, if it's Shabbat? Ben ashmashot on Shabbat, you could not shech this animal in order to make it muchan adam on Shabbat. So what's Rashi saying here? That this was muchan adam is not lo'avim muchan leklavim. So therefore, he brings an alternative girsa in the Mishnah, which is the garas im lo'aytag nevelam erev yom tov, in the position of Rabbi Yehuda, and that's to a gesele a line with what Rashi is suggesting over here, that's muchan adam, is based on the fact that it's yom tov and not Shabbat. So Tosafot on the other hand says, no, it's really talking about Shabbat, and it's not learned out right, like Rashi says, because the assumption is it's muchan adam, it's not muchan leklavim, but it's actually learned out from the extraneous language in Rabbi Yehuda's statement. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Im lo itana ve'elam erev Shabbat asura." He could have stopped his statement over there. It was asura. We know it was asura because of muksa. He doesn't need to add anything. But then he says, "V'yishenu mina muchan." He then says, adds on an additional statement that it's not from a muchan. And what Tosafot says is that additional statement of Rabbi Yehuda is saying that not only is it problematic because it's muksa, but it's also problematic because it was only muchan adam, it's not muchan leklavim. And so therefore, Rabbi Yehuda must be talking about not only on Shabbat, where it's problem because it's a surah because of muksa, but it's also problematic on Yom Tov, where it's eno mina muchan. And that extra extraneous language teaches us something that's muchan adam is not muchan leklavim. And that's Rabbi's proof from that Mishnah in Shabbat. But then Tosafot brings another possibility that the whole Mishnah is talking about Shabbat, from the Rabbi Yaakov Mikurbil, who says that if on Erev Shabbat there was Muchan Adam, because on Erev Shabbat you could have shechted the animals Muchan Adam, but it's Muchan Adam, if you believe Muchan Adam is Muchan Leklavim, that means on Erev Shabbat, going into Shabbat, it was both Muchan Adam and Muchan Leklavim. And therefore, when it transitions into Shabbat, even though the Muchan Adam falls away, the Muchan Leklavim should still be in place. And therefore, you should be able to give it to the dogs on Shabbat. The fact that you can't shows you that Muchan Adam is not Muchan Leklavim, and therefore going into Shabbat, it was only Muchan Adam and not Muchan Leklavim, and therefore on Shabbat, when the Adam falls away, the Klavim have nothing, and therefore Rabbi Yehuda says it's Muksa, and you can't feed it as an Avela to the dogs if it dies on Shabbat. By it says, Muchan Leklavim, Abi Muchan Adam. If Muchan Adam is not Muchan Leklavim, you're going to tell me now that Muchan Leklavim should be Muchan Adam? I'm going to lay in. So Rabbi or Rav Yosef, whoever made the statement, retorted to Abaye and said, Muchan Adam, lovi Muchan Leklavim. You're right. But it's Muchan Adam, it's not Muchan Leklavim. Tamay Chazile the Inish, lo shardi le Leklavim. Because something that is ra'oi for human consumption, humans don't give up that to dogs. And we're talking about a subsistence existence, where people barely survived. Famine and death by starvation happen all the time. And so therefore, anything that's a food substance that is good enough for human consumption, nobody's going to consider that to be given for dog food. Dogs were a very low second to human consumption, and therefore if it's ra'oi for human consumption, you're not thinking about giving it to dogs any time, even if it's muchan adam. Muchan leklavim, rabbi muchan adam, but vice versa is not true. If it's muchan leklavim, then it's also muchan adam. The date in the inish of kol mide de chazile. Person will keep his eye or take note of anything that could possibly be something that he could eat or something that could be a food consumption for him. And therefore, something that's muchan leklavim, even though it's only muchan leklavim because it's a treifa, nevertheless, since they know that the ego can be born from that, will be possibly kosher, and then you can shecht it, they have in mind. So the muchan leklavim by that mother will make it so that the egel, the calf that is born, is muchan leadam, because you don't give up perspective or your eye on that food that could possibly be there. So Tosafot says, well, if that's the explanation, then why don't you say the same thing by a froch? Why don't you say the same thing by the unhatched chick? By the unhatched chick, it's also muchan leklavim beforehand. And now when it hatches, it's muchan adam. And let us say that, well, if it's muchan leklavim, you don't give up your eye on that food item or that human consumption. It should be mutar. So Tosafot says it has to be that it's omeid la'achila, meaning that the mother, the way that it is as a treifa, is something that the dogs could eat in that state. That's not true of the chick. The chick inside the egg is not readily available or accessible to the dogs. And therefore, it's not considered to be muchan leklavim. that's Mukhan Adam, because it's not really Mukhan Adam, Mukhan the Klavim, because he says, D'binan, Mukhan va'omeid, v'zeno omeid the Klavim. This is not readily available to the Klavim. Now the Gemara says, Tanya Kavate de Rav, Tanya Kavate de Shmuel, v'itema Rav Yochanan. We have a braita that supports Rav's position over here. We have a braita that supports either Shmuel or Rav Yochanan's position. Tanya Kavate de Rav, we have a braita that supports Rav's position. Egel shenolad b'yom tov, mutar. An egel that's born on Yom Tov is mutar. Efroch shenolad b'yom tov, asur. But a chick that's born on Yom Tov is asur. It's exactly the distinction that Rav made. And here you have a braita that is supporting that contention, exactly what Rav said. Ma efresh ben zeh lezeh, and what's the difference between them? Muchan agav imo bishchita. The difference is that the egel is muchan through its mother in order to facilitate the ability of the egel, the calf, to be also ra'ui. Mezeinu muchan agav imo, but that's not true of the chick. The chick is inside of an egg, and the mother is used for breeding, not for eating, and therefore it's a tarnagolet legadel beitzim, in order to raise chicks, and therefore the mother is not ra'ui for achila, and the chick inside the egg, when it's being incubated, is not also not ra'ui l'achila. It's only after it's hatched, that's ra'ui l'achila. And that's muksa, that's very different than the case of the egel. That's exactly what Rav suggested as his position versus those that question him. Tanya kavate de Shmuel, you're bright to that supports Shmuel's contention, v'item Rabbi Yochanan, that is mutar, the chick. Egel shenlar b'yom tov mutar. An egel that's born at Yom Tov is mutar. Rav agrees to that position as well. V'froch shenolad b'yom tov mutar. And even a chick that is hatched on Yom Tov is also mutar. My taimo. What's the reason? Zeh muchan agav imo. The reason for the egel is the same reason that Rav gives, which is that it's muchan agav imo. Since the mother is ra'oi, so too is the egel. And even if the mother is a treifa, it's ra'oi leklavim. If it's ra'oi leklavim, the person has his eye on it. And when the baby's born, the calf is born, he has his eye on it, and therefore it'd be mutar as well. Even though it was only Muchan the Klavim, it'll also be Muchan the Adam, if you hold the Muksa. V'zeh matir etzmo b'shchita. And the Afroch is matir etzmo not through the fact that it is Muchan agavimo, but rather because of the fact that it is Muchan ayudei shchita. I mean that now that the chick now became accessible to do shchita on it, it changed its status. And that change in status now sheds the old Muksa status. And since you're allowed to shecht it, which is a much higher, quote-unquote, isur, the fact that we're matir that isur on Yom Tov, because you're allowed to do ochel nefesh and shecht it, then that also will override or overcome the problem of muksa as well, or the way that we explained it before, which is that the new entity now does not carry the burden and the encumbrance of the muksa that it had before, because it's now such a significantly different entity, because it can be mutar ayudei shechita. So now the Gemara continues, Tanu Rabbanan, Efroach shenolad b'yom tov asur. And Efroach, that's hatched on Yom Tov, is asur. And that is similar to Rav's position that we saw before. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, af b'chol asur. Not only a problematic on Yom Tov, it's also problematic on a weekday. The fish lo nitpatchu enav. Because the eyes didn't open. So the eyes not being open means that it's not reached a state of being where shechita would be efficacious to make this into an achila. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov has a higher standard. It's not enough that the chick is hatched. The chick has to hatch, then open up its eyes. Yerushalmi has a different qualification that has to have its feathers have to fill in. It has to have real feathers. So it's even more time. But that means that anything that's hatched is not going to be ra'oi l'achila on that day, because it needs time to develop and mature. Eating it or shechting it before that time is inappropriate. And that is Keman Azla HaDetanya. Who does this bright to follow? The Chol HaSheretz HaShoretz Al-Aretz. So the Kol is a ribuy over here. Anything that creepy qualities on the land, there are both Efrochim to come in and include chicks. I mean, the chicks which are unable to fly and they're unable to walk, they can just so they make their way along the ground like a sheretz. So they're included in this restriction that the Chol Sheretz HaSheretz Al-Aretz that's restricted to you, they're in that category of Sheretz HaSheretz Al-Aretz. Shalom Yitpachu Enehem, because they haven't opened up their eyes. So who's that bright to light? Come on, Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. That's like Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. And obviously this has influence on the Psak Halacha. First of all, we know that the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, is Kav Naki, and therefore we generally will paskin like him. And similarly, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is supportive of the contention of Rav, because he's speaking with the Tana Kama, and the Tana Kama says it's Asur B'Yom Tov, and he says it's not only Asur B'Yom Tov, it's also Asur B'Chol. But that means that he agrees that it's Asur B'Yom Tov. Now the truth is that he might think it's Asur B'Yom Tov for a different reason. He might think that Rav is wrong. And the reason Asur B'Yom Tov is because the same reason he thinks it's Asur B'Chol. So that's the question, is what's the interplay between them? Because if we're going to pass like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, does that mean you automatically pass like Rav? or the fact that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov supports Rav, does that mean that the halacha is like Rav? Or if we pass him like Rav, does that mean we're also going to pass him like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov because he supports him? Or is there a difference? Maybe we only pass him like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov when he doesn't argue with the Rabbim, when he argues on one other person. But when he argues with the Rabbim, maybe we don't pass him like him. So the Rishonim are debating how to gauge the interaction, the interplay between these two. So Moses and Rishonim think that halacha here is like Rav, then Afroach is Muksa. It says the Isser comes from Muksa, shows you that he doesn't think that that's the reasoning behind the Isser over here, and that means that he doesn't hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and therefore so many of the Rishonim don't paskin like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. And even though that's the case, the Magen Avraham says that the Minhag Ha'am is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and not to eat it before it's grown or matured a little bit, although the Taz does say that there are those that are matir even immediately, even before it reaches those states of maturity that are noted by Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, we're going to stop here, six lines up, and the narrow lines on Vav Amud Bet, and we'll continue because the new Sugya continues through tomorrow, and we'll start from there in tomorrow's daf.